Welcome to episode 59 of the Strong Style Story Podcast here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I am your host, Selector Jeffrey Wessel. You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. The blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. With me today, co-host, co-creator, co-producer, co-OG, Chris Damasceno. Chris, how you doing, brother?
Doing good. Cool, a lot of things, as you just pointed out, and it's been a while since we've done one of these New Japan shows. We've been keeping ourselves busy with Boom Goes the Dynamite, for the most part, on your Wednesday night listening post AEW shows, but we'll talk that, you know, this next Wednesday. For now, we've got plenty of New Japan business to cover.
Oh, yeah.
Outside of the World Tag League, which nobody cares about, but we still have to cover.
I guess we're still kind of
industry standards.
Yeah. Well, more on our complete lack of caring of the World Tag League in a little bit. But first, this past Sunday on the 3rd of November was Power Struggle 2019, and yes, there were some title matches. The Super Junior Tag League final, Roppongi 3K winning their third in a row over El Desperado and Yoshinobu Kanemaru, a team that they wrestled three times in the last 30 days.
The 3K three-peat, if you will.
Oh yeah. Kenta retained over Ishii for the, never openweight title, and, Ospreay beat Bushi to retain the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title. We never thought for a second that Bushi was winning this, right?
It was sad, but I will say this. Bushi more than held his own, as he's been known to do in these rare single spots. And Will Ospreay is a dipshit, which we've covered plenty on this show, and it apparently is now an official, in which I've been blocked by the man.
Yeah, you caught that block, didn't you?
I did.
Wow.
I mean, this is fine. I figured it was coming at some point.
Yeah,
so
I
just surprised it took this long.
I haven't caught that block yet. I've caught the block from Nick Jackson and from Herb Gordon, but I have not caught it from Ospreay yet.
Give us some time. You're hanging with the right crowd.
Damn. And then, of course, the main event, Jay White retained the IWGP Intercontinental title over Hirooki Goto. So at one point, we got a video message from AEW's Le Champion, who I'm still kind of pissed off at, but I'm not going to get into why. You can find out on the last episode of Boom Goes the Dynamite that was live. I'm not going to repeat myself.
Mm-hmm.
But although, unless you want to say something about it, because you missed the last episode of Boom Goes the Dynamite.
No, I think it was covered pretty well. Just, I'll keep it simple. It's been known on Jericho's whole podcast that he books some of the weirdest fucking people, includes like conspiracy theorists and some real, like, really kind of, you know, bottom of the barrel type guests from time to time. But this is a new low in general. And from what I hear in terms of what's been reported on social media side of the defense, it's not like he challenged guy's views. I'm not going to even say his name because it's not deserving of any attention at this point, but
yeah.
it's a bad move for everybody involved, and just don't fucking do it, Chris. Like, you should know better at this point.
Yeah, but, well, I already said my whole point of view on Boom Goes the Dynamite.
Yeah, for sure.
If anybody wants to go check that out. But anyway, but he challenged Hiroshi Takahashi, which we kind of knew that was coming since Dominion, but it's good to make it official. And, I just love to point out the fact that there is such subtle differences in the way that Jericho in AEW is versus Jericho in New Japan. They're different characters. They really are. Even though, you know, Jericho still invokes the whole Painmaker thing in AEW. But yeah, I mean, they really are different characters in New Japan.
Yeah, definitely so. And it's going to be good because it is a match that if you talked about it 5-6 years ago, you'd think it was an impossibility at that juncture, but it's happening in 2020. So
yeah,
here we go.
And then, but of course, let's face it, only one thing really happened at Power Struggle.
Oh, yes. We've been waiting for this for a long time.
Since July the 8th of 2018, we have been waiting for this moment. The return of our boy, Kamitachi Hiromu Takahashi.
The best. Just
my God.
And, I mean, let's begin with...
And he comes out in the most typical Hiromu fashion possible, just falling to his knees and laying face first on the ground.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Completely throwing himself in the guardrails, into the corners, just typical Hiromu things. The new remix of Time Bomb is phenomenal as well.
Can't wait
for us to get it into, I think it's Greatest Music 7 is going to be the one that's going to be coming out like in February of next year. That's normally when they release the yearly albums with new themes and stuff. So it should be good regardless though. Like he made a cutoff, which is going to be amazing in that regard.
Milano was all of us when he was handing off Daryl Jr.
I think it was Naoru. He was all of us. Yeah, I think it was Naoru who got he gave to Milano, and then Daryl was to Kevin Kelly.
I thought that was Daryl Jr.
No, Naoru was the Red Cat.
Oh, when did that happen?
Yeah, it happened. Earlier this year, I want to say it was Dominion actually when Naoru got announced.
Right.
They did that whole sale at Dominion. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Now, what's the relation of Naoru to the family?
I am not 100% sure. Somebody tweet us at Strong Style Story if you know the specifics of that. I just don't recall it, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I guess is Carol taking care of Daryl Jr. at home then? I mean, Carol's fallen off the face of the earth.
I think she's probably just at home with Daryl Jr. for the time being, at least.
I mean, we know the status of the entire extended Daryl family.
As you can see, we care a great deal about Hiromu's things way more than we care about World Tag League, for example. We're going to be pounding this in throughout the rest of the show,
yes.
Guys.
And that promo was absolutely masterful, especially the way he changed his voice in places, you know?
God, just mocking the entire aspect of the exact shit that people were saying on the internet, I'm sure, all over the place.
I mean, they shouldn't be mocking the fact that people care about him. I mean, I also know that people were going bananas, and now the story, you know, we're going to get Kenta against Shibata at the Dome. I'm like, please, God, no. You know, just please, no. Don't do that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's one of those things where I get from the character's perspective as to where he'd be coming from with kind of mocking that a little bit, just because Hiromu's Hiromu, he's just going to do whatever he wants type of thing. But I do believe that he's taken, like, kindly to like the messages that people have been sending him throughout this past year, you know, hoping for a speedy recovery and that, you know, they're happy to see him back.
He does that bridge on his neck. It was like, oh my God, what are you doing, son?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Mike, please.
Yeah. And then he cuts a promo, in English.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I mean, what more can I say? It was the best moment of one of the best moments of wrestling in 2019. was his return. And how cruel is it now? How cruel is it that Dragon Lee got fired by CMLL at this point?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but
how absolutely cruel it is.
Just again, Mexico needs to sort its politics out like real quick or some shit. Yeah. But we know it's not going to happen. Yeah.
And now both Rush and Dragon Lee are supposed to be taking part in a AAA event coming up. In fact, I think it's going to be Dragon Lee against Kenny Omega.
Yes, I believe I did hear about that. Yes. Mm-hmm.
In AAA. So yeah, that's going to be weird considering, you know, the relationship between Rush and between Ring of Honor and CMLL, and Rush being ROH. You know what? Wrestling is just a cocktail. You know?
Yeah.
Nothing makes sense. You know, it nothing makes sense anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah, so that was Power Struggle, and after Hiromu, I couldn't have cared less who won between Jay and Goto. I mean, we already knew it was not going to be Goto. We knew that.
Yeah.
There was no way. And now, of course, you know, the four-way program is officially set up with Okada no-selling the whole thing, but, you know, he had to open his mouth about putting it to a vote, and, well, there you go.
Yeah, indeed.
Go ahead.
To Little Kaz's credit, he did poke fun at himself at a backstage comment later on once the vote did get announced as, yes, we want to see the double title match.
Yeah.
But it kind of shows the trend that at this point, any time that Naito's involved in anything, Okada has to shit on him, like as an in-character deal. It adds to just the discontent that either of them have for one another.
Oh yeah,
it's kind of brilliant in that regard.
Yeah, and incidentally, the challenge of Hiromu against Ospreay has also been made official, of course, for Wrestle Kingdom. So, but yeah. Hopefully, we'll have, you know, the full scope of Wrestle Kingdom once we do episode 60 next time around.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably going to be a bonkers banner double. I mean, it's definitely going to be a double episode at this point. You know, our one of our side A, side Bs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's going to be bonkers for sure. So last night was the first show under the banner of New Japan Pro Wrestling of America, which we have not discussed here on this program yet.
We did not. It was news that got dropped on us shortly after the last episode under a press conference where this is the next big stage of New Japan's expansion into the United States.
Yeah, so let's talk about that briefly. Is this a good thing to do?
I think it's an interesting move to make, especially with AEW picking up steam over the course of this year. I am curious to see as to how Bushiroad goes about tackling markets beyond just the California and East Coast area. We did see them trying to do something big in Texas this year and then not having, I think, the crowd that they would have desired out of it.
Yeah,
so it makes me wonder if they'll adjust it a little bit more throughout this next year in terms of like
what
buildings they run. And
yeah, I think
like
they overshot the mark by having it at the American Airlines Center. But at the same time, as we fully pointed out, it almost didn't matter because the crowd was so hot at that show.
Exactly. Yeah, the only thing we would have probably wished for is just them shooting it a little bit better from a camera TV perspective, but yeah, that crowd being as hot as it was all night, you still take that every time when you can get
it. Yeah, I mean, the hot crowd really did do that, but I mean, I think maybe they overshot the mark by trying to hold it at the American Airlines Center. But
yeah, sure.
That being said, I do like, it's weird that New Japan of America is going to be doing their own little territorial system. Sort of.
Yeah, for sure.
And get all I can say to New Japan is get thee to Chicago and Indianapolis.
Yeah, you know? The Midwest, there's money to be had there for sure. I definitely believe you can do some stuff within Texas as well, within smaller buildings, and make it work, just because there is a very population there that definitely enjoys it. I know Colorado's kind of in a dead zone in terms of pretty much everything entertainment wise, like outside of the odd WWE Raw or SmackDown shows, we don't get much else over here. So I'm kind of selfish in desiring for a show, even in a small building over here, if it can be helped, but I don't see it happening.
I mean, you'd think that they would maybe try to hit Denver, you know?
You would think, I think there's a big enough audience here that you could try something like a 2,000-seater, and you probably would sell it out, especially because you probably would get people either traveling from, like, the Utahs, Wyomings, and even, like, Kansas of the world just to do that in this case, like, get enough people from around that same contingency. But, that again, for now, that's wishful thinking. We still need to wait and see what they do with this New Japan of America approach in terms of the buildings. It seems like they're going to be tackling a lot of the Ring of Honor market share, which...
Oh, yeah.
Fuck you, Ring of Honor, to say the least.
Did you see the numbers? Did you see the numbers that Ring of Honor pulled in?
It's been depressing, especially knowing that our boy O'Shea Edwards is part of their dojo now in terms of, like, doing stuff there, and you
want to see him
be successful. But yeah, it kind of sucks that the company has not set themselves up arguably for kind of what's coming in the next few years here. Attendance has been dwindling, and just...
Yeah, what really sucks is that that building in Pittsburgh is the one that my honey and I went to back in 2017. When that was when Hiromu and Suzuki and Yano, I mean, there was like some when they were kind of like expanding who was going over there beyond just, you know, Okada and Tanahashi.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, the building was packed. People were into, of course, the Elite were still there too. So I'm sure that has a lot to do with it as well. I mean, I'm not going to, you know.
Deny the success.
That was part of it, but I mean, it was great. I met Suzuki. I met Hiromu. You know, it was, I mean, you saw the pics at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, for sure.
You know, it was, I mean, and that building, the state that Stage AE is a great building. Or is it Studio AE? I can't remember. Anyway, but the point is that, and you know, the next night in Columbus was the worst fucking wrestling crowd I've ever been in, and I'll never go to another show in Columbus again. So Columbus can kiss my ass. But those numbers in Pittsburgh were just fucking depressing. But at the same time, Ring of Honor have nobody but themselves to blame for the position that they're in right now.
Yeah,
you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that New Japan now has the swagger to, you know, go forth and book venues that Ring of Honor had booked, possibly selling them out better than Ring of Honor can at this point.
Which they've already proven with the Fighting Spirit Unleashed tour that just happened this past September.
Yeah, and that, despite the, you know, act of sabotage that allegedly happened.
Mm-hmm.
But, and we're going to be discussing more conspiracy theories later on in the program. But, I think it may be still at this point, I don't think New Japan should be trying to book, you know, I don't think New Japan should try to book the United Center in Chicago. You know, I don't
definitely not.
And let's face it, there's two other buildings that are pretty much already on lockdown. The Allstate Arena / Rosemont Horizon. I mean, WWE has a 4-night residency coming up, you know, the week before Thanksgiving, you know, for Survivor Series and TakeOver and the bookending SmackDown and Raws.
For sure, yeah.
And then, the Sears Center here in Hoffman Estates, you know, which is, you know, let's face it, that's now AEW's building.
Yeah, that is.
And,
100%.
Yeah, which is another thing to bring up is that I mentioned this on Boom Goes the Dynamite, but I'm going to bring it up here too. Is that Nick Jackson was quoted in an interview saying that there is no way that there's going to be a cross promotion between AEW and New Japan now. I'm of two minds of this. Number one, it makes sense from a business standpoint because New Japan of America is now going to be a direct competitor to AEW.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense, and I can't fault that. But I also, want to think, why would New Japan, I can't see why New Japan would not want to work with a company that actively disses them and their talents on worldwide TV.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the basic gist of it for me is neither company really needs the other, so they don't need to work together. AEW already has kind of a small relationship with DDT, which DDT and New Japan do not get along after a situation a couple of years dating back as is. So why try to kind of like really prod and poke at that? And that's the thing, like New Japan has established itself enough as a brand within the US doing these sorts of shows as it is to where they don't need the AEW talent, because for the most part, a good amount of that roster has already worked for New Japan at a certain point there, and we've seen certain particular matchups there. Outside of Lucha Bros and like Darby Allin and a few others working within the confines of New Japan, we've seen just about everybody else doing it.
Yeah, and I will just remind everybody once again, we had Pentagon against Kazuchika Okada sitting right there, and nobody chose to take it. So
I've been pieces, everybody. Anyways,
I will just point that out once more.
We're not gonna let that one die.
I will never let that one die. That would have been like an ultimate dream match right there. You know.
No, pro wrestling's pro wrestling. You never know.
Yeah, that much is true. But you know, again, last night was but the first show of this new Japan of America.
Yeah, and this thing is before we talk about, there is going to be a Los Angeles show coming up this Monday at the Globe Theater, which is normally known as PWG's big building at this point when they run shows over there. There will be some interesting things happening. Very interestingly enough, a guy who's been making waves in the indies ever since July 4th this year when he appeared in a GCW backyard show and did some of the craziest shit known to men, Alex Zane is getting booked in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, he is.
Which is...
Yes, he is.
I'm very excited for him, by the way, on that, because he is pretty phenomenal.
Although, right. That show isn't making tape, I don't think. Make tape delay, but...
Yeah, it's not going on the live stream of any kind, but it's most likely it could be a couple weeks out. Yeah. They'll release it on the VOD side of the fence.
Yeah. Which I hope they do, because buried deep in the card is a Kota Ibushi versus Ren Narita singles match that I really want to see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but let's talk about last night, which was a big night for wrestling because of course the AEW Full Gear was also going on, which we're going to briefly cover on Boom Goes the Dynamite, because I'm not really up to do a full pay-per-view review. I really am not. I'm sorry. I just can't do it. You know, we already do a weekly show about AEW. We'll just cover it there. We'll just briefly cover it there. So anyway, the first match, it kicked off Red Narita against Alex Coughlin. Of course, that was going on whilst the AEW title match was happening. So I was kind of only had one eye on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was decent. It was decent. Ren looked good. He beat Alex Coughlin, Narita special number 4. The second match, the finale in the USA for Jushin Thunder Liger, and in which he teamed with Aaron Solo against Toriano and Colt Cabana. I'm not sure if this is just, I don't think it was disrespect, but what a way to go out in the USA.
I mean, look, Liger just wanted to do something fun for his last USA match. And you know what? I don't blame him for it. Yeah,
which is fine. It was a fun match. And the crowd were eating up everything Liger did.
Mm-hmm. That Solo got to show off some good stuff on his end as well, too. And it showed off the Yano Cabana team and what they're going to be able to do for.
The on and off team of Toriano and Colt Cabana, because that's happened in Ring of Honor before, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the third match, Minoru Suzuki and El Desperado beat the LA Dojo Young Lions of Carl Fredericks and Clark Connors. It was what it was. You know.
Yeah. Spicy Carlos, good. It's good to see him getting some more time. But yeah, it was what it was at that point.
As was Tomohiro Ishii, Juice Robinson, and TJP beating Evil Sonata and Bushi. Juice hitting Bushi with Pulp Friction.
No, of course.
Yeah. Bushi gets no love ever. But
fucking hell, man.
Yeah. I mean, he has like one of the biggest followings of the group just because of his, you know, all of his mask picks and his, you know, daily, you know, self-care regimen and
owning a restaurant on top of it too. Bushi is a pioneer.
I keep forgetting that he owns a restaurant. What is his restaurant?
I believe, I'm trying to recall the specifics on that. I think it's a takoyaki place.
Oh shit.
I will figure this out.
Oh damn. Takoyaki. Damn. The next match was kind of a random chaos team against a random Bullet Club team.
right.
Yeah, Goto, Yo, and Romero. Yeah, there we go. Against Kenta, Taiji Ishimori, and Jado. Again, that match was what it was.
Also, apparently for Bushi, it is a fried chicken takeout shop. Actually,
well, you know, that makes even more sense why the pictures that you remember, it was like a year or so ago that Kikutaro posted pictures on his Twitter from Vegas of Bushi in a Popeyes.
Yeah, that explains it basically.
Yeah, he was checking the competition out.
checking what the Americans are doing with their stuff.
I hope Bushi gets to try the Popeye's chicken sandwich because I have not even seen a Popeye since I moved.
Yeah,
I know they're out here, but I have not seen one. I don't know where there's a Popeye's near me to go to try the chicken sandwich.
I know there's a couple around the area. I just haven't gotten the chance to go in and do that myself. So yeah, here's hoping Bushi is told about this and goes to check out the Popeye's chicken sandwich.
Just yeah, I think it'd only be right. I think Bushi would enjoy the chicken sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Next match, our first title match, the RevPro Undisputed British Cruiserweight title. El Fantasmo retains against Sho. This was a really good match. Sho looked like a fucking superstar in this match.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, he looked like an absolute superstar in this match.
Mm,
and I really think that Sho and Yo, for that matter, both deserve to have singles programs for a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I do agree with that. I think that they are ready to be on that juncture as well, for sure.
Yeah, that looked really... Sho just looked fantastic in that match. And that's coming right after, you know, watching... You know, two really good main event type matches in AEW too. It was like, wow, you know, this was mind blowing, you know. But please, Sho needs to branch out more into singles, as does Yo. You know, I mean, they can still be Roppongi 3K, but you know, it's time to start. You know, let's start spreading our wings a little bit here. You know,
for sure.
Especially with Hiromu coming back. I mean, goddamn,
you've got options now, definitely.
Yeah. The next match, the IWGP US Heavyweight title match, Lance Archer, basically squashing David Finlay. It was a little extended squash, but Finlay in his return match, yeah, he just got punked out.
I mean, he put up some good fight there for certain spots, but it was definitely a Lance Archer heavy showcase at this point, and it being like a first defense to go into eventually Wrestle Kingdom at one of the two nights to defend a title and at least not say that, hey, he, you know, got punked out in his first defense attempt kind of thing.
Yeah. You saw Archer basically berating Juice, saying, yeah, you ain't worth shit, basically. I really think they need to stop that right now because New Japan's booking of Juice has just been not good. I mean, they build him up and then they just, you know, knock him down again, you know?
Yeah, we've talked about this before, and at some point, either the trend has to, you know, be bucked and it be just kind of your upward movement, or I think you risk, you know, possibly losing him at a certain point or another.
Yeah, so
it's just...
So I think maybe let's just move this over to Moxley, please. I mean, Archer and Moxley, and then we can finally have our big blow off match that we were supposed to have between Moxley and Juice, please.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah, please. Let's just put Archer and Moxley together, because I mean, my God, Moxley will just be, you know, he's Moxley. Speaking of my Wrestler of the Year contenders, the next match, Tetsuya Naito and my clear winner of Wrestler of the Year so far, Shingo Takagi, beat the Bullet Club team of Jay White and Chase Owens. You know, I'm really enjoying the build between Naito and Jay.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Shingo is just fantastic. Everything Shingo does just is amazing.
Yeah, it was a fun tag between them. Chase Owens still shows that low-key he can go whenever he needs to go at spots like these and more than hang, so good on him for that as well. But the interactions between Jay and Naito give us a really cut-clear preview of that. This next match coming up at the 4th is definitely going to outdo their G1 bout earlier this year, for sure.
Yeah,
and the IC title match as well.
Oh yeah, and Naito's just bringing the hatred now. It's amazing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He is absolutely bringing the hatred on this. And then finally, our main event was also very good. Kazuchika Okada and Will Ospreay defeating Kota Ibushi and Amazing Red.
And Kazuchika Okada, beloved in America. What an absolute unit.
He is so over in America. It's not even funny.
Just little Kazu, man. Little Kazu
He is amazing. It is amazing how over he is. And I am also glad that Amazing Red is getting this little junket with New Japan in his retirement year.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
You know, it's great considering how much of an influence he has had on junior heavyweight wrestling. You know. But in any event, of course, you know, Okada cut a post-main promo partially in English, like he does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He tends to do that. Yeah, the crowd in America loves Okada. There's just no way around it. I mean, hearing the vast majority of people chanting for him at MSG was something else.
Yeah, it's still one of those moments I'm going to remember for a long time, having been there in person and being part of that. Because,
oh, yeah.
Just what? Yeah, it was a moment for sure over the course of this year. And, you know, in retrospective, you know, now that we are in November heading into the end of the year, it's kind of hard to believe in a couple ways what's happened this year, not only just in pro wrestling in general, but for New Japan as well. Like,
yeah. Well, we'll get into that next episode when we do our anniversary and our year-end
for sure.
Wrap up.
And I will say this is the open invite for John Pingle to come onto this podcast for episode 60, because there is the Okada Rock Bottom story dating back from a couple of years ago at G1 Special.
Yeah, I need to hear this now because you guys have built this you've built this up so much that I need to hear this.
I remember telling John specifically on that, I'm like, that was a good night for me and Jeff, but goddammit, I wish we were there for this. Just
yeah,
that was the level of that story.
Yeah.
So
yeah, especially after it was a good night, even though I spent, you know, part of it on the phone.
You were just thinking to yourself that weekend, hey, at least I don't have to fucking do my job as usual. And then lo and behold, you just like
while you guys are all bullshitting playing. All bullshit and playing virtual pro wrestling. I'm on the phone trying to, you know, fix the Airbnb's internet.
I mean, to be fair, we provided good commentary that made you chuckle from time to time there while you were on the line with the guy.
Well, that's
true.
It was a woman, yeah. Actually. Well, it was a woman, actually.
Oh, again, yeah. My bad. Thank you for
Yeah.
Correction is necessary, yeah.
Anyway, Moving on. Let's so the World Tag League's coming up. It starts on the 16th. We don't care about this. We're totally in the who gives a shit territory of New Japan now, as we ramp up to Wrestle Kingdom. This tournament never seems to have any consequence.
Very much the establishment of which teams are going to be involved in the heavyweight title match at the Dome, which it serves a purpose in that regard, but it does make it so that, well, you're not really seeing much of a fallout beyond just winners take on the champions kind of thing.
And then somehow they'll make it into a three-way or a four-way match anyway.
Yeah, that's been an unfortunate trend the past couple of years as well.
Rendering this entirely meaningless.
But at the very least, I guess we can cover the teams that are going to be in it just for the few who are curious enough to check it out.
Right. Well, I mean, what they're talking about, though, is that because there's two nights at the Dome now, it's like now there's more opportunity. So now, you know, people who don't already have matches booked, you know, like Hiroshi Tanahashi, you know, who's, you know, does have a match book on the 5th. So maybe he could be in the tag team match on the 4th. Hiroshi Tanahashi is not going to be in the fucking tag team match on the 4th. Give me a fucking break, guys.
These are some expectations. but regardless, let's just run down the teams real quick before we talk ourselves in circles and get madder about this.
So, appearing in this year's tournament are, of course, the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Tama Tonga and Tongaloa. I really still insist that on tournaments like this, they do not book the champion. You know?
Yeah, I hear you.
And that goes for G1 Climax, too. Don't book the champion. You know? But anyway. Also participating, the current reigning two-time World Tag League winners, Evil and Sonata, as well as the previous two-time Tag League winners coming back as a team, Togi Makabe and Tamaki Honma.
Yeah,
I don't know if Honma going to be up for this.
I think Makabe will handle a majority of the work in those, but yeah, it does make you wonder given the broken neck situation from coming back from it.
I still think that Honma cannot put his arms at his side.
He does not look like he can at this point.
Or at least he's not risking it. Yeah, I honestly do not think he can put his arms at his side. And that is not a good sign for a continuing pro wrestler.
Yeah, for sure.
When you have a limited... Anyway. Also in this tournament, some familiar faces. Fighting Club G-Eggs, of course. Yuji Nagata and Manabu Nakanishi.
Yep.
Tenkoji.
Yeah, they are coming back for this one, which is good.
I'm happy about that. I love Tenkoji still to this day. You know, another familiar team, Juice Robinson and David Finley are back together. As are Tomohiro Ishii and Yoshihashi. They're back together.
So, Ishii and Deadweight, great.
Yeah. So anyway, the rest of these are kind of like new matchups. New-ish matchups. Hiroshi Tanahashi and Toa Henare. I don't think they're never going to do anything with Henare at this point, are they?
At least nothing specific as far as we can tell. He's kind of on the Finlay loop right now.
Yeah, he kind of is. He kind of is. Also, Hiroki Goto and Carl Fredericks, which seems a bit of a head-scratcher, but I mean, it's the LA Dojo thing. It's the LA Dojo and Shibata thing, even though Goto's in chaos, but he's still with Shibata. Yeah, I don't know. You know, they've totally fucked up this whole thing.
Yeah.
The aforementioned Toriano and Colt Cabana.
We were both going that same wavelength then. Perfect. Yep. Just Yano Cabana team.
Here's a random ass team. Jeff Cobb and Mikey Nichols.
Yep. That one.
Jesus Christ.
I think that one specifically, we need to get Jeff Cobb in this tour somehow and away from Ring of Honor. Mikey Nichols is available. You know what? fuck it, let's just do this.
Why couldn't we put Yuji Nagata and Jeff Cobb back together? Because they were, like, a very enjoyable tag team at the beginning of 2019.
It would have been fun to see. I do agree with that.
They were a very enjoyable tag team. You know, when Cobb had to fill in for Elgin and ended up showing out that... Oh, no, I take that back. Oh, I'm sorry, Nagata filled in for Elgin. My bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right. But whatever. I mean, Nagata, I will take Nagata over Elgin any day. But, moving on, the other Ingobernables team, Shingo Takagi and Terrible, the only member of Los Ingobernables still employed by CMLL.
Yeah.
And yes, that does include Marco Corleone.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Because he's retired. But, I mean, after he married that actress, I mean, you could tell he was not going to wrestle anymore.
he's got telenovela money now. I don't blame him at all.
Right.
Good on him getting out of WWE.
Good on Mark Jindrak. He made it.
Yeah, like good on him. Like got out of WWE when the going was like decent enough for a guy of like his size without as much of the mobility as I think they would have liked, you know, making a career for himself decently enough in Mexico, joining the original Ingobernables faction, and then getting all this. Like, he's married, he's got kids. Like, good on him. Live a happy life in Mexico, man.
Yeah,
like, enjoy it.
Good on Mark Jindrak. But anyway, Takagi and Terrible. I don't know. That could really go either way.
I mean, Shingo will have to probably do the bulk load of this, but this is fine. Shingo Takagi is wrestler of the year at this point. He'll handle it.
And I mean, I don't know. I mean, Terrible is not, you know,
he's not
Terrible, but you know, he's not great either. So, a first time Suzuki Gun matchup of Minoru Suzuki and Lance Archer.
Yeah, that one's intriguing. Which they're taking the Minoru Zack teaming and, you know, having Archer kind of be the big heavy to him at this point. So that could make for some interesting bounce
again,
there.
Yeah, but then again, Saber and Taichi are back together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This one I'm a little bit more interested on just because Taichi has picked up the steps considerably throughout this year, and Zack is just kind of a lovable goof to an extent, depending on like whether he wins or loses shit. So
have you noticed that Saber's going back to like his bowl cut?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, two Bullet Club teams. One brand new, the other one is a return. The return is Bad Luck Fale and Chase Owens, which mm-hmm. Okay. And then you know Kenta and Yujiro as a team.
The excuse for Kenta to be around Peter and for Kenta to point out on social media that she's hotter than most of the girls in WWE to troll them accordingly, which he has been known to do at this point.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Thanks, Kenta Kobayashi, for that. So, anyway, there's your World Tag League. It's going to go 3 weeks, and I don't know. You know, whatever.
Like, here's the thing, when Kenta's trolling somebody and even Jay White, who's arguably the biggest prick in this entire company, goes, damn, man, on social media, Adam, like, you're doing something.
Yeah, Kenta's got some issues to resolve here.
Yeah.
But, so anyway, so yeah, there's that. So yeah, and that's about as far as we're going to take it for the World Tag League, because, again, I really just don't care about this tour. I wanted to. I've always wanted to because, you know, New Japan, you know, there's been a lot of great tag teams in New Japan and that. But, yeah, really, I just don't care. The division is trash, and this isn't going to make it any better.
Yeah, it's just, it has been shown over the course of the last couple of years that there hasn't been as much care and thought into this tournament as we would have liked it to see. I'd like to see it improved, if anything.
I mean, I would too, but I don't think this is going to do it.
Yeah. At least I don't think it'll be this year. So.
Especially when your champions don't even show up on half the tours now.
Mm-hmm.
You know. What does that tell you? I mean, there's, yeah. I mean, I don't know. You know what? That's a discussion for another time. The tag team division in New Japan is trash.
Mm-hmm.
It's just where they put people when they have nothing else for them to do in singles, you know? And we
this
know,
has been
and,
a trend.
And you
yeah.
know what? Most companies act like this. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that, you know, the Gorillas of Destiny, yes, are an established tag team. That's fine and great. The fact that you don't, most teams, you can't assign a name to, that tells you something, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So. Anywho, so, Chris, we mentioned last episode about Bushiroad and their purchase of Stardom and how there's going to be Stardom exhibition at Kara Expo. Well,
as we found out, New Japan's getting some of their own guys in there to do it, too.
Yes, they are. We're going to have the two Lions Break shows at Kara Expo again on December the 7th and 8th in Anaheim at Bushiroad's, you know, little convention. So basically, this is the New Japan, you know, convention panels, you know,
yeah.
as we've come to call them. So there's some new names have been added to this, including, you know, Ren Narita and Aaron Solo, who we just talked about.
Yes,
mm-hmm. is going to be on this. El Fantasmo as well. Some new faces too. Barrett Brown, who I know I've seen him somewhere, but I don't know where it was.
Yeah, the name does sound familiar.
It may be in Ring of Honor. I don't know. I just can't place where I've seen Barrett Brown before.
It would have been probably Ring of Honor or Evolve, I would think.
I don't watch Evolve, so it wouldn't have been there. So... But yeah, it's somewhere I've seen this guy, and it was, and he's decent. I mean, he made an impression on the LA dojo. There's also two twin wrestlers who I know absolutely nothing about, Logan and Sterling Regal.
Yeah, that's the first I've heard of them as well.
Yeah, but also they're adding a wrestler named Mysterioso.
Hmm.
And I know I've seen a wrestler named Mysterioso, but apparently the original Mysterioso has sold the mask and the mask rights to at least three people. So I don't know if this is the same one I've seen or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, makes you wonder in terms of, hey, well, what's going to happen here?
Yeah, I mean it's pretty interesting. But they have been added to the Lions Break show. Of course, Carl Fredericks has been removed. He was originally announced, and he's been removed from that shows because he's going to be engaged in the World Tag League.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, don't expect a lot of. I mean, there's not going to be a lot of top guys in this at these shows, but that's okay. I mean, but these shows are also going to be like three matches too, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a convention panel is what it is.
Yeah. It's a convention panel. And, again, they haven't fully announced the ticketing for these yet. If it's going to be like last year, the shows were basically free. If you did standing room, if you wanted to sit, you had to pay for a ticket. But the trick is that either way, you had to have a badge into the convention.
Yeah.
Which is only fair. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's basically it's like we've gone to conventions before. We know how this works. If you want to get into the convention, you buy a badge for that particular day or the weekend of. And in that situation, when you're going into a panel, you find, you know, whatever seating or standing room that there is. And I guess if they're doing it where you can stand and watch, great, that comes with the badge price, but if you want an actual extra, like a seated seat at that particular portion, panel, venue, whatever it is, then yeah, you pay a little extra for it. So it's
It's only fair. I mean, it's there as part of the convention, so... Mm-hmm. And even at, like, you know, Comic-Cons, they have, you know, ticketed events that you have to, you know, pay a little extra for.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
know, at big conventions. So, you know, it's it is what it is. So, boy, we're kind of whipping through this show today.
I mean, hey,
we
it's
haven't
great.
Even hit the hour mark. Yeah, that's fine. I'm getting way into doing shorter shows now. Like I'm kind of insisting that like Boom Goes the Dynamite is no more than an hour, you know. But that's for
Special?
Practical. But that's also for practical reasons too. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So.
But yeah, which is going to make this week's Boom Goes the Dynamite interesting, since we had to get in, you know, Full Gear and Dark. Although maybe we can just ignore Dark this week. I don't know.
Probably another quick recap, but regardless.
Whoa, you there?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Your mic cut out there, brother.
I think I hit the mute button like a second too soon.
Oh.
What I was saying was just basically, regardless, we can just cover Dark matches in quick pace and then move on to what we need to do at that show. But I mean, New Japan-wise, for the most part, Power Struggle happened, Hiromu returned, that was a big thing.
Yeah.
We've covered certain events. There's still the rumors out there that, who knows, maybe we do get a Stardom match as a showcase at the Dome in one of the nights. Maybe we don't.
Yeah,
not much
I don't see that. Well, so. if it does, it won't be on NJPW World because they have their own thing and, you know, there's TV contracts.
Yeah, exactly. That's the part that makes me feel like it's not going to happen. Even
yeah.
unless they can work out the rights in some way, shape, or form, then yeah, it's...
Yeah.
Becomes a
yeah. So let's wrap up this show with a couple of things. Our Young Lion updates. We can close the file on the we can close the missing persons file on Hirai Kawato.
Yep, we found him.
We found him. He's back in Mexico. He returned last night at Arena Coliseo, which is, you know, a show that never gets taped. But and of course he fell, you know, he and his team fell in three falls. He was teamed with Rey Bucanero and Felino, who is of course the brother father of one of our favorite now indie luchadors, Puma King.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But So they fell to a team, the brothers Angel de Oro and Niebro Roja. Angel de Oro seems to be getting the top billing of those two now.
From what I've been seeing in terms of the cards and results, too, from just what Lucha Block shows on Twitter, yeah, that definitely does seem to be the case. Which,
But they also had Atlantis Jr. in that team, and I could, you know, logically, we could see a program between Atlantis Jr. and Kawato, because Kawato still has the world lightweight title.
Yeah, he does.
But this is CMLL, and we all know that they never book based on logic.
Yeah, that one's always an interesting one, for sure, in terms of, like, logic. What the hell is that?
Yeah. By the way, as far as we know, Dragon Lee still has not returned his title yet.
I mean, look, at some point or another, that CMLL has so many titles that it's like maybe they just don't need it yet and they'll get it back from them whenever they decide to do something with it.
Yeah, they have so many titles, and titles don't seem to matter as much in CMLL as the apuestas.
Yeah, this is true.
As we've said a couple of on a few occasions. But, Kawato's back, but he's not the only Young Lion we need to talk about. Shooter has gone to RevPro, and he actually is known as Shooter there. It's there on the ass of his tights and everything.
Mm-hmm. Had a match against Kyle Fletcher to kick things off on his end of things, too, and that gear looks fantastic on
it. The gear looks fantastic. I heard, you know, everybody has reviewed it, saying that show was that match was a banger. I don't think that show made tape. So we may be SOL for seeing any footage of that.
True, but it is very interesting in a couple ways. Like the gear that we've seen the pictures of at this point. it makes me wonder if Tana had a hand in like giving that to him as like an excursion gift or something like that, because it has some heavy like 2006, 2007 Hiroshi Tanahashi vibes.
Oh yeah, I mean, oh yeah,
the colors and everything.
Oh yeah, it totally does. And you know, he could thank John Moxley for bestowing
the shooter.
The shooter. I mean, let's face it, we didn't think of it before Moxley did. You know,
definitely not. I mean, I'll still default to calling him Shota on that, but I mean, hey, run with it at this point.
Let's face it. I mean, yeah. I mean, again, we've said on this program before, Shota has, because of his family connections, has really kind of benefited in certain ways more than other young lions. Shota was getting, you know, the singles bouts against Shingo and Daisuke Sekimoto and, well, Moxley.
True, but I will say this too, like, out of the crop of young lions too, like, we saw him work twice as hard because of that on top of it as well. And nobody can deny the talent that's there, which is the big thing.
His skills have proven that he deserved his push, but let's face it, we all know part of the reason why he got that push to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about a situation where he... you know, circumstances allowed for that advantage, but he more than took it and ran with it rather than just backpedaling on it from time to time and just living off of it.
Yeah.
Like some people would do. So.
Right. And like we said at the time, I think it was last episode, that I mean, he did not need the Young Lion Cup bump at all. He did not need that. Carl Fredericks needed it. Shota didn't. He got the Moxley bump, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think footage of that is gonna make the rounds. I hope it kind of does at some point. I would like to see that, but you know, regardless, good luck to Shooter in his excursion.
I was about to get to that. Of course, along with that, we've got Ren Narita as well, who is now at the LA Dojo. He's been a part of it. We saw him at Showdown. We're also going to be seeing him in his first booking outside of a New Japan show of any way, shape, and form coming up this weekend.
Yeah, he will be in Crown Point, Indiana at Black Label Pro's year-ending Slammelton event. And unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it because I got booked into a work thing. So I don't think I'm going to make it there. Which stinks. I really would like to see I would really like to see Ren Narita, you know, outside of New Japan.
Booked into a work shoot. What a time.
Yeah. Well, you know. But, I don't know if, I mean, last night Ren was still wearing the black, you know, the all black everything. Is Ren going to wear something else when he's not in a New Japan ring?
Yeah, it does make me wonder, like, the approach to that in this case, or if he's going to keep it as casual as Shibata was. I mean, his socks, I think the sock shoes portion was a little bit different because it did have like the little white stripes on it.
He's got the Adidas thing going there with his sock. Mm-hmm. His socks,
I am interested though to see what kind of a look we'll see out of Ren going into Slammelton in this case. If it's just going to be the look that we've been used to seeing him on, if he'll bust out something different. I hope it's just bust out something a little bit different just for us to see kind of what his own take on what he wants his gear to eventually be as well down the line. So,
I mean, it's all good. I mean, good luck to him. If I know that Slammelton show was going to be shown live on,
IWTV. Yeah, I believe so.
Which is not a service I subscribe to because it used to be Powerbomb, and there was some BS involving Powerbomb that, you know, somebody who I rather like got screwed over in that, basically. But, you know, well, to hear him say it, but, you know, it's just, it is what it is, and now they are IWTV, and, you know, well, the show will be on there.
Yeah.
Black Label, which by the way, I can recommend Black Label Pro. They are a good Midwestern indie promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Who actually came to Hoffman Estates. And even though nobody seemed to recognize it as a Black Label show, everybody recognized it as a GCW show.
Right, yeah, because it was the combination between them and GCW
Yeah, I
partnering
mean,
up for.
when Joey Janela, of all people, had to point out, hey, by the way, you know, this is Black Label's show, too, you know?
Yeah, it's like, just keep that in mind, guys, because that's Black Label talent that they were using as well with that, so.
And I didn't, and unfortunately, I didn't get to talk to Eric Stevens there, you know, our friend on Twitter, Eric Stevens. I didn't get to talk to him at that show because he was in the first match, but he got legit KO'd.
Oof.
During that
match,
that's unfortunate. So yeah, I never talked to him. I'm glad he recovered. I mean that was you know, when I saw that, I was like, oh my god, geez, you know. So hey, shout out to Eric Stevens, if you're listening.
Yeah,
but
it's exciting for us though in a way, because initially when we started this show about, you know, so many years ago,
four years ago,
try to say three initially, but I'm like, no, we're coming up on four, I think. So,
and in fact, the blog's about to have its anniversary because, mm-hmm. It was during the World Tag League that we started the blog. And I remember the very first post was about Tanahashi and then Yohei Komatsu going into DDT.
Yes, mm-hmm. And that entire phase of things. But the biggest thing for me is that at that time too, we knew that, you know, Sho Tanaka, Yohei Komatsu were headed into their eventual excursion as well. And we saw eventually Hiromu coming back from his excursion and things like that. So this really, seeing, you know, the young lions, this crop of young lions that we've been talking about for so long with Shota, with Ren, and a couple of others during the time, just seeing them now finally reach the point in which they've done their young lion phase and they're heading into tour now. This is kind of the first time where we've seen that journey from the very beginning, and that's been super interesting to follow
Do you realize we have covered some of these guys' entire careers?
Yeah, I know. It's nuts,
like,
isn't it?
Like, you know, our boy, you know, Katsuya Kitamura. And then, Takumi Honjo, he, like, did five matches and bolted.
Mm-hmm.
Remember him? And then, you know, unfortunately, Tetsuhiro Yagi, I liked him, but he got injured, and he said, no, this isn't for me anymore, which I can't blame him.
No, not at all.
But, sorry, my dogs are in the background there.
No worries. Doggos being doggos, it happens.
It's just wild that we have seen some of these folks' entire careers from beginning to end. But now, you know, again, we've seen, when we started this, you know, they were still Sho Tanaka and Yohei Komatsu. They were off to be Raijin and Fujin. You know, then they ended up as the Tempura Boys, and now, you know, they came back as absolute superstars. We had, you know, the return of Hiromu from his excursion, even though his excursion started long before we started. Because he actually had, like, one of the longest excursions of anybody.
Yeah.
But, so now, I mean, look at it now. Yeah, we've got, Ren Narita has started his excursion, so is Shooter. Kawato has a title. Tomoyuki Oka has a title now.
Yeah, he's part of an entire stable Rev Pro at this point.
Yeah,
with the likes of Rampage Brown, Shaw Samuels, and I think two others.
Yeah.
So he's being set up for success from the looks of it.
Yeah, I mean it's just wild. We're getting to see these guys from beginning to. And another one that we've seen their entire careers. Remember Teraki Kanemitsu?
Yeah.
He debuted the same time as Kawato. I honestly thought that Kawato was going to be the one to wash out.
Yeah,
boy,
I know.
Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, and then Kawato just really turned it up. Yeah.
Kanemitsu was the better of the two for a long time, but then he had, you know, a spinal injury.
Yeah.
It's
never good to begin with. So.
Yeah, just circumstances. But yeah, and then we saw how in Kanemitsu's absence, Kawato just exploded. Kitamura is going to be the one I'm going to be saddest about, because he could have been an absolute massive superstar. I mean, it literally and figuratively.
Just, it's one of those things where it's very unfortunate that, you know, the car, I think it was what, the car accident that injured his leg as bad as it did. And then, hey, here's to him hopefully accomplishing his goals in bodybuilding like he's been working at recently. So
But I still have the possibly the only piece of Kanemitsu merch ever that will ever be produced, and it wasn't even legal. It was bootleg from Atomic Elbow.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I still have that shirt, though. All right. So, yeah, enough reminiscing down memory lane, as we're going to do a lot more of next episode. We do our anniversary show. So the last thing I want to cover, I think, is some horse shit. But it needs to be addressed. There were a story broke this week in the wake of Kenny Omega going back to Japan to work DDT, which I heard was a fantastic match.
It was a fun match between them. Antonio Honda and Miyu Yamashita definitely held their own on their end of things as they've been known to do. Riho was really good in it as well. So
yeah, but from this, a story was circulating that Kenny Omega got held up at immigration, and of course the conspiracy theories have abounded that New Japan is fucking with Kenny's ability to come into the country somehow. And you know, and this didn't help when Omega tweeted out, what was it, Friday? It was Friday. That, you know, the truth is worse than what you think it is. You know, I'm sorry. I don't think this is the case.
This isn't Inoki or Baba running either of these promotions. Like, Bushiroad is a powerful corporation, but they do not have that level of pull.
But Abima is more powerful.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. Like, you'd think, like, Abima is way more.
Abima are DDT's owners, in case you weren't aware of that.
Just right, yeah. There is that to point out. And this is not like the great Baba somehow convincing Japan to go, hey, Dr. Death, we know he, you know, brought in some weed into the country, but, like, can you just let him slide? I kind of need him for this show. And then Japan goes, oh yeah, fine, okay, Baba, we like you a lot, so you go.
This is to think that a pro wrestling company has this much pull in this day and age with immigration, especially with the rise of anti-immigrant, especially with the rise of anti-immigrant sentiment in every corner of the earth now.
And not to mention the fact Japan already had enough, like, tough immigration laws even before some of this to begin with. And you take in, like, what it is in our modern day and age. So, yeah, it's...
But, yeah, you know, but it's easier to you know, hey, New Japan is causing all these problems.
New Japan's screwing over our favorite Japanese foreigner person who is a permanent resident kind of thing. It's just like, it's one of the circumstances where if Kenny does have permanent residence in Japan, this shouldn't be an issue for him to begin with, which makes me think it must be some sort of situation with money, taxes, whatever the situation is, that he fucked up in his own right and just is trying to spin it into this bullshit story with the help of Meltzer.
Yeah.
Like, sorry.
But which is admittedly as much speculation as saying that New Japan is actively preventing him from entering the country.
It's like the extreme sides of the spectrum here, but we're all going to draw conclusions until we at least hear, like, one side of the story. And then once we do, it's like, great, where's the other side, too? So biggest problem is that, like, just Kenny, we get that you have issues with New Japan at this point. It's no secret after the little package that you did during the entrance for Halloween using Undertale and stuff like that, but just come out and say it at this point. Like, don't.
Yeah, seriously. Just shit or get off the pot about this. Either say what the things, what the issues are, or don't, and let it lie. But now, you know, we've got to rile up the fan base, and New Japan are awful, you know, because they're preventing our hero from, you know, entering the country. Give me a fucking break. Bushiroad does not have that much pull. I'm sorry. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they couldn't get Matt Sydal out of actual jail. You know? Yeah. Oh, you there?
Sorry, no, I am. A brief moment here. But no, I do agree with that. It's just a situation where it's complicated to begin with, and there's definitely bitter feelings on both sides of the fence, whether it's Kenny is like, oh, you're not letting me have the freedom to do the things that I want to do in New Japan in 2018. And for New Japan, it's going, hey, we pushed you as hard as we humanly could in the year 2018. And you just decided to basically go, oh, I'm going to, you know, leave you basically at this point.
First chance I get. We created whole titles for you. You know, but they didn't respect and didn't push me. Okay, bruh, sure thing. The last 6 months of 2018 was all about the Elite and your internal issues. You know, they ran with that angle. But yeah, we weren't given any time to do what we wanted to do.
Yeah, and I mean,
the
we talked
fuck out of here.
And we talked about through this all of last year, too, that we thought for that six-month stretch leading into Wrestle Kingdom 13 that, yeah, the Elite were the worst part of the company. And they all left at the same time range. So, and ticket sales have improved considerably
The Elite almost got us to abandon this show.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't take it anymore. It was that bad. And I mean, let's face it, in my time as a New Japan fan, I have had to put up with Brock Lesnar and Tadao Yasuda as IWGP heavyweight champions. So no, Kenny Omega was not the absolute worst. But
I think this is weird. We somehow indirectly defended Inokiism in this podcast for the first time. That's how fucked up this was.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. No, I still said that Yasuda and Lesnar were worse champions than Kenny Omega was, but
but on that overall perspective, it's just like, woof, the fact that we're even going close to that comparison is kind of just like, yeah.
Yeah, I will never live down the scars of Tadao Yasuda as IWGP champion. But, you know. But they, you know, anyway, moving on. The point is that, you know, this is, I mean, yeah, we get it. AEW and New Japan are not going to have a relationship with each other, and that's fine. It's okay, you know?
Mm-hmm, 100%.
I mean, we cover both show, you know, both brands now. It's okay. We don't have to make a big conspiracy theory about the Japanese government it being in Bushiro's pocket, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, you know, whatever. Yeah. Just please tell the story or shut up about it. That's all we ask, you know? But, you know, everything's got to be, you know, there has to be a big conspiracy behind everything these days, you know?
It is at this point. It's basically to just the shit or get off the pot. And let's just be done with it. Like, at this point, you're in the AEW. New Japan is still going. Just do the best that you can for the companies that you're working for. And just, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, pro wrestling, huh?
Pretty much.
Pro wrestling, what a crock. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Anyway, on that pleasant note, I think we've pretty much wrapped up everything we're going to discuss on this program. Of course, Chris and I do Boom Goes the Dynamite weekly here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network, as we've mentioned before, several times even just in this broadcast. And, of course, our next episode is going to be our big episode 60, as well as our – it's going to be our Wrestle Kingdom preview, as well as our year-end wrap-up and our anniversary show. But I think we're probably going to do that after the Road to Tokyo Dome shows, right?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it may be. So, you know, we it's going to be about a month before the next episode. But then, you know, it's cool. Again, you can hear us every week, too, every Wednesday night. So with that in mind, Christopher, any plugs?
Just the usual Twitter and Instagram at Brazilian Fury. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z.
And you can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in Style on Twitter. My personal Twitter is at GD Wessel. You can the blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com, where I'm still going to be, even though I don't care about the World Tag League, I'm going to be putting up the results. My God, 16 teams. Jesus Christ. It's going to be a rough one. It's going to be a rough month of November on the blog, Chris. I just want to tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, if you're interested in the beautiful game at all, you can also listen to me at soundcloud.com/busting-balls for the Busting Balls podcast, the most recent episode of which I slandered my favorite club, you know, the club that got me into the sport, for 30 minutes. So,
rip.
Hear me slander them, especially after their performance yesterday, which, yeah, the less said, the better. So, anyway, Chris, any final words?
No, just let's get through November and then onward to the Tokyo Dome.
Onward to the Tokyo Dome. Onward to our anniversary, too. So, hey. Okay, you have been listening to episode 59 of the Strong Style Story podcast. Listen to this and other fine programming here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. So until then, it's going to be about mid-December, but we'll have a big banner bumper edition, episode 60. It's a milestone, and yeah, so we'll just see you then. So until then, take care. Goodbye.